time now for Oh the Humanities, taking a look at humanities scholarship events and research on campus and beyond. Joined in the studio by two special guests today, as always, Max Orr, who heads up Carolina Public Humanities, and joined also today by Lloyd Kramer, who also heads up Carolina Public Humanities. Humanities.unc.edu is the website. Get more information about upcoming events, looking ahead to next semester as well. There's going to be a lot more. Guys, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
It is our pleasure. You know, Lloyd is not part of this tradition where I bring dates, something related to today's date, and I promise you we'll avoid popes today, but I couldn't help but notice that, you might notice that your viewers can see this through the radio,
right, the book
that I'm holding up on a giant magisterial tome on the life
That is a book that's bigger than its subject, I believe.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. It's about Bonaparte, and I just want to say today is December 2nd. It's a great day to be Napoleon because in 1804 he was crowned himself emperor, and the year later, he won his biggest battle, his most famous battle, the Battle of Austerlitz. So a good year to be Napoleon. His nephew crowned himself emperor in 1852 on the same date. So if you want to be, no matter which Napoleon you are.
That was a little bit less successful.
Yeah, a little bit less successful. Yeah. One other little cool thing I saw, I just couldn't help resist. Today was the day that the Monroe Doctrine was promulgated by James Monroe in 1823. And in 1961, it's the day that Fidel Castro declared that the Cuban government was Marxist communist. So I think it's just a nice little, both of those things happened on December 2nd. So it's a little balance there between the Monroe Doctrine and Castro.
So you're reading this book on Napoleon. You yourself are a researcher, a scholar of Napoleon. So I have to ask, you're not all the way through the book yet, based on where the bookmark is placed. What do you pick up from reading a book like this that you don't already know?
Well, first of all, the writer is great. Patrice Guinefe is a fantastic author, and I like reading the different perspectives. Everything I read, I learn something, and I've learned a lot. This is a very detailed book. It only covers his career up to being emperor. It doesn't even go beyond his coronation. So it's very in-depth, and again, just sort of things are presented. There are always new anecdotes I wasn't familiar with and new perspectives. It also gives me something to argue against, if the author says something, well, that's not exactly how I would, interpret that. So yeah, I do learn, and I have two others I have to get through before I present on Napoleon again next spring. So.
Nice. And Napoleon is always useful in our own time just for understanding delusions of grandeur among would-be authoritarian leaders.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely very pointed, Lloyd. Yeah. And so very true.
I did say that when Napoleon III crowned himself emperor on the same day in 1852, that one turned out to be less successful. You could argue that it was more successful, though, right? Because didn't he last longer than the first Napoleon
and certainly
did?
As emperor he did. And, certainly the Second Empire was a great age of industrial growth in France, and we might call it the modernization of complete industrialization and modernization of French society took place a lot of it under the Second Empire, ended in a disaster as well with the Franco-Prussian War. But yeah, I mean, there's an argument to be made for the Second Empire being worthy of study.
Yes, worthy of study, I think we can all agree on. So what's going on?
Well,
we're getting to the end of the semester.
Lloyd and I, we have one more event coming up tomorrow that we have. We wanted to celebrate. As you know, this has been a whole year of celebrating our 40th anniversary, and we wanted to celebrate something that maybe could resonate with this anniversary idea. And it happens to be the 100th anniversary of Prohibition. So we thought we would get a member of our advisory board, who is a professor of history at NC State, Dave Zonderman, to come over, and he's an expert on U.S. history, in particular 20th century U.S. history, and give a talk on Prohibition, and we would, fittingly enough, serve champagne while we did so. this was largely the brainchild of Lloyd's. Lloyd, why did we pick this particular topic?
Well, I think this is an important topic because Prohibition is a much-discussed issue in terms of our own anxiety about drugs and the regulation of drugs, and this was deemed to be the great social experiment of the 1920s, and could we eradicate problems like alcoholism? It turned out to be quite a failure, and it contributed to the rise of all kinds of criminal groups and problems that were replicated in some ways by the drug trade over the last 3 or 4 or 5 decades. So the point of this event is to think about what was the impact of prohibition in American society? And what can we learn from the failures of that noble experiment, as it was called at the time, for our own culture and our own society?
And I think going back and understanding that it was, in fact, considered a noble, kind of progressive experiment, like this was a movement that was close to a century, right, to build up to this moment in 1919 when that passed.
Because for generations, people had complained about alcohol abuse, much as we talked today about opioid addiction. Alcohol disrupting families, social life, communities. And so there were many progressives who had long supported this experiment or this goal. And it lasted about 12 years.
Yeah. Also kind of telling about the U.S. Constitution and the way that we conceive of it and use it, too. One of the things that I've heard about prohibition that stuck out to me is this is the one time in American history that the U.S. Constitution was amended to restrict rights rather than expand them. And it's also the one amendment that didn't work out, that ended up getting repealed.
It's also interesting to look at the patterns as to where it was approved and where it was opposed, because at almost the same time, there was a movement to approve the 19th Amendment, which brought voting rights to women. And some of the states that were most vehement about supporting prohibition were most opposed to voting rights for women and vice versa.
Interesting. So what were some of those states?
Well, states like you can imagine perhaps that some of the southern states that were most part of the Bible Belt were very strong advocates of prohibition, where there tended to be more opposition to giving rights to vote to women. Northeastern states tended to be much more supportive of women's rights and less supportive of prohibition.
It's interesting about that, because there is a sort of a bit of a stereotype about some aspects of the prohibition movement that are tied to the women's movement, is that this is virtue. There's a gendered aspect to alcohol abuse, and that, you know, and this is a story we hear all the time. Women wanted their voting rights, and part of wanting their voting rights was to control the men who had been drinking too much. And I think what Lloyd has just shown us, that, you know, when you dig down into the evidence, it's a lot more complicated than that.
It's not a one-to-one fit, but there is an interesting pattern of support and opposition of both amendments.
So what's the event going to be on, which day did you
tomorrow,
say it was? Tomorrow,
it's December the 3rd. It's at 6:30 p.m. at Flyleaf Books, and all are invited. There will be a talk, but there will also be wine, cheese, and hors d'oeuvres to celebrate this great event.
I like it.
It's like one of our, of course, we love doing things at Flyleaf Books, where we have so many great events, our great books programs, our Humanities in Action series, which we've talked about all of these here. And so celebrating at Flyleaf Books is particularly nice for us. And it is also the 10th anniversary of Flyleaf Books.
So, oh, awesome.
So it's a nice, although that's not officially, I think they're having their own celebrations.
Right.
We will mention it, and we will celebrate that partnership we have with them.
Speaking with Max Orr and Lloyd Kramer, again, humanities.unc.edu for more information on Carolina Public Humanities, including upcoming events. There's this one tomorrow at Flyleaf, but more to come as we get into next semester. Getting to the end of the year, and it was a big milestone year for CPH.
It was a banner year for CPH, and we brought a little bit of data for you. This is just for fall 2019, in which we had 8 weekend seminars, a whole Humanities in Action. We had a whole great books reading groups, mornings at the movies at Chelsea, special events, including a host of teacher events, which we'll talk a little bit in more detail in a moment. But just get this number. We reached 2,549 people at our events this year, and that's just great, because every single one of them is going to leave enriched and hopefully make an impact on someone else's life with the great information that they got.
Because that's where the real impact is. It's when those people go out and tell two friends who then tell two friends.
We're creating a humanistic society, we like to say, with starting with 2,500 a semester.
Lloyd? So our goal is to enhance the conversation, not only in Chapel Hill, but across the state. And one of the ways in which the university is connecting, UNC Chapel Hill is connecting with the state, we had over 20 events over the last 18 months at community colleges all over the state. And
awesome.
We also had other events where we reached about 750 teachers. So I want to stress this, because we often hear at the university about all the good work that the School of Public Health is doing and the good work work the med school is doing. All of these are important projects, but at Carolina Public Humanities, we are also reaching people all over the state to talk about what is the meaning of history, of literature, of philosophy, and how do we build a stronger civic culture, which we think is essential for the health of the state of North Carolina.
Yeah, I think that's kind of front and center in a lot of people's minds now, the importance of having a strong civic culture, because we can kind of see what happens when those ties are weakened a little bit more than we'd like.
Yeah, and sometimes you can sort of hit the hammer on the nail the hammer. What's what I'm trying to say? Hit the nail on the head by really aiming at civic education and whatnot. But we truly believe that the humanities in general, you know, learning about historical events, reading great literature, being exposed to ideas in film, there are all of these add to sort of an oblique way of getting people to perhaps be a little bit more empathetic, a little bit more critical thinking about how they come across cultural things in their own lives. So we feel like it's both a civic education, but also simply a humanistic education adds to that same mission.
Awesome. So, Lloyd?
So, what we would say in general is that democracy depends on well-informed people, and we believe that in all years, well-informed people need to be part of public life, but as we come upon election years, it becomes all the more important and people are able to put their lives and experiences in some kind of context.
Yeah. I think, and the more I teach American government, the more I become appreciative of this. It's well-informed people, and it's also well-valued people as well, people who care about the values of democracy, especially, and equality, and celebrating human rights and freedom, and those are things that the humanities teach as well.
It's a tough job, honestly, because, you know, these are, if you start, as I said, if you approach things very directly, which we do, and we're going to have a lot of programs on the elections that will have political content, but we want to make sure that, you know, we are being responsible for creating a welcome environment for people. We want to listen as much as we want to share information. So we're going to be doing a lot in the next year to provide forums for public discussion with community members, as well as faculty and students, on a host of topics, many of them, again, very political, but again, trying to cultivate a dialogue as opposed to just a transmission.
So as we wrap up this conversation, what's coming up next year?
We have so much stuff. we have two very special events. Our Adams Symposium, we do every year. We're bringing down Tommy Shelby, a Harvard professor of philosophy, who's going to be giving what's the exact title on that?
He's talking about the problem of prisons and social justice and what has happened to the idea of private prisons, which has become a very controversial and problematic approach to prisons.
Yeah.
We also have programs coming on issues like great journeys in world history. We have themes such as great cities. We're going to do one on Eastern Europe. We have a whole series of themes that I think even went on archaeology for that matter.
Absolutely.
And how people make sense of their lives through these kinds of events, like travel. But also, I should say we're planning some special symposia on civic engagement and public dialogue. And it's going to be our contribution to UNC's ongoing concern with expanding the dialogue of public discourse.
Awesome.
We certainly would like people to consider coming to Humanities in Action next semester as well. Our a series at Flyleaf Books, 4:30 on Tuesdays. The whole series is going to be on technology, society, and culture. So we're going to be hitting all sorts of things from transportation to music to information preservation and all sorts of interesting ways that we might not think about technology entering into our lives. So you name it, we're probably covering it next semester.
We like to think of ourselves as sort of the WCHL of the humanities. It's where people come to get information and to meet other people.
I'm good with this. I like this.
Can I be the Aaron Keck of the humanities program?
I wondered if that
H could... Be careful what you wish for.
That H could stand for humanities.
Ah, there you go. Again, humanities.unc.edu for more information on, again, tomorrow's event on prohibition at Flyleaf and, of course, upcoming events as well. Max Lloyd, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Aaron.